these are very difficult times we face at the moment. And we felt it would be useful if we were to speak to a number of colleagues from around the world about the difficulties they've faced and resolved in maintaining industry currencies. So for the next few weeks, we'll be speaking to a number of these colleagues. And this morning, our research director, Richard Marks, and myself speak with Justin Sampson, chief executive of Barb, the television audience measurement service in the UK. And Justin, perhaps you could start by explaining to us how this crisis has affected TV ratings.
I think, like most countries, we're seeing a very significant increase in the amount of time people are spending watching the TV, and they're spending more time watching Barb reported channels. So last week, the average time spent viewing Barb reported channels was 3 hours and 46 minutes a day, which is the highest viewing levels outside of Christmas that we've seen since early 2018, when there was the beast from the east, which caused people to not be able to get into work and stay at home. So very, very high levels, as you would expect. News channels are benefiting, as you would expect. Sports channels aren't. Daytime viewing particularly seems to be on the increase, and topical shows produced by broadcasters are attracting audiences in the millions. We've also seen a significant increase in unidentified viewing, and we expect that this is being driven by SVOD services like Netflix and Amazon. One small little story which is very clear in the data is that between 9 and 9.30 on weekdays, there is a very clear bump in unidentified viewing, which we think is directly attributable to a kids' PE class on YouTube being run by a guy called Joe Wicks. We can see a bump in the data for that.
Okay, and how are advertisers responding to this?
I mean, I'm not personally close to the detail, but I think it's abundantly clear that CFOs, finance directors around the boardrooms are putting a hold on as much discretionary spending as they can while it becomes clear what the full implications of this health crisis will be. For some sectors, clearly, such as travel, I think they've effectively disappeared as a sector. Television, you would imagine, will be a bit more resilient. Clearly, other media like cinema and outdoor are going to have different challenges. But the challenge for all commercial broadcasters, they've got audiences higher than they've had for many, many years, but advertiser demand has fallen away very dramatically. And we've heard numbers of a decline of perhaps as much as 50% in April. Mm. So it's very, very tough times for commercial broadcasters.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was interviewed just before Christmas by The Times about their perceived view that the ITV schedule wasn't very good, and why wasn't it very good? And I was trying to explain that actually, over the actual Christmas period itself, advertisers weren't as interested in advertising because, you know, they'd done most of their selling in the lead up to Christmas, and the shops were shut, and there wasn't much to advertise. So I guess the worry with this is that it's, from an advertising perspective, like a 3 or 4 month Christmas weekend in terms of its attractiveness to the advertisers. But
we'll need to see how things play out. I mean, I think that there are, and then this is where, not being close to the detail, I can't give a as informed view as I perhaps would like, and things are changing almost day by day. So we need to see, firstly, how quickly the dust settles and how quickly the clouds start to lift. And when they do start to lift, it's difficult to predict at the moment what the long-term implications of this are going to be.
Mm. Now, obviously, once it became apparent the full scale of the the lockdown, I think it was becoming apparent for a week or two it was going to happen, and then it was announced 2 weeks yesterday. What measures have you had to put in place to ensure that you have successfully so far been getting the ratings out every day?
Not a lot has changed, actually. I mean, all our contractors have been able to maintain services even though staff are having to work at home. There's been no interruption in daily reporting. And as of today, which is April the 7th, if you're watching Time Shift, which I guess many of you will be, the reporting sample continues to hold up, although we do expect that to start declining, because ever since March 17th, Kantar suspended all technician visits to panel homes, whilst Ipsos suspended all face-to-face interviewing. And the Ipsos will obviously affect the establishment survey, while the Kantar decision will affect the panel reporting size. We do expect a decline in the reporting sample, and we have high and low estimates of what that decline is going to be. But given we haven't seen any decline yet, it's difficult to judge whether the reality will be towards the higher or lower ends of our expectation. I might be able to give a better answer on that towards the end of this month. So clearly our expectations are that the situation will become more challenging. But in terms of use of our data, it has very much been business as usual so far.
It's interesting that, I guess, on the one hand, one of the sources of churn in the panel normally might be people moving home or changing household circumstances, which clearly they're not legally allowed to do at the moment. On the other hand, if someone's meter breaks, there's not a lot you can do about it.
There are potentially ways of maintaining meters remotely. Increasingly, it's possible to make changes to the meter through remote software upgrades. I think there's also a thought that some maintenance jobs might be manageable with a technician sort of talking the panel member through things over the phone. Clearly not ideal, but Kantar is actively thinking through initiatives that can mitigate the risks of that are inherent to the situation we're in, where we can't visit panel homes. So there are potentially ways around it, but it does throw up new issues. So I was on a call yesterday where I was hearing that in some panel homes, you've got a panel member who had been away from the home and is now sort of permanently self-isolating away from the home. So they're not on holiday, but they're not in the reporting sample. And I think we've had one or two homes as well where the panel members are actually struggling to get back into the country. So there's reflection there of some of the human impact of this public health crisis, and clearly we have to be as respectful and thoughtful and mindful of all the pressures and challenges that people are going through, and we have to be very sensitive to these situations as we try to continue to fulfil our objectives.
Realistically, I guess it's early days yet, but how long do you think the service can continue in this way, effectively sort of, you know, running on pre-wheeling, as it were? And are there any alternatives you're thinking about in the medium term if this is, protracted for months on end, that would perhaps mitigate some of that concern about the panel becoming imbalanced?
I think you're right, Richard. It is a bit too early to say, to be precise about how long we can keep going without doing anything fundamentally different. As I said, we've got high and low estimates of the impact, and we haven't seen enough of a change yet to give us a sense of whether one or the other end of that that spectrum of potential outcomes is the more likely. One of the things we immediately thought about is that Barb has, for many years, had a partial ratings contingency model. And now this is something we thought, well, is this the time to use this? But having sort of thought about it.
Could you explain a bit more about the background to that? Because I've been aware of it. Viewers in the UK may remember something called the Pools Panel, which would come into operation if the football was rained off over a weekend. Then expert footballers will predict what the scores would have been, so that people could still do the football pools. But I know it's been in place. Could you explain a bit more about the history of it? Has it ever been used before? I'm not sure it has. Has it?
Well, it hasn't, and we actually don't think we're going to need it this time round, because actually what it was designed for was a sudden, very unexpected loss of data, which could be caused, for example, if a mobile network which we were reliant on to poll homes suddenly failed, and we found ourselves with a reporting sample suddenly half of what we'd been expecting. But given the circumstances we're looking at now, we imagine any decline in the panel will be gradual, and that working with all our research agencies, RSMB and Kantar, we can modify the weighting system as we go, so that we don't need to fall back on a model. Mm. So that was one thought. We can use this contingency model, but then we thought, well, actually we probably won't need to, although we clearly will keep that on the table as an option as we see what happens. And if there's a sudden change, then we may need to go back to that. But we're talking to the research agencies about a wide range of initiatives to mitigate effects. I talked a little bit earlier about technicians potentially doing some remote maintenance by talking to panel members on the phone, remote software upgrades. These are all ways of potentially handling the routine maintenance tasks that are important to keep a panel the reporting size that we ideally want. When it comes to things like the establishment survey, we're currently expecting we will be able to publish the quarter one establishment survey results, although they'll be on a significantly reduced sample to what we would expect. Looking ahead, we are already starting to talk with Ipsos about opportunities of trialing different approaches, so that we can be in a position to put in place alternative methods if the ability to get into doing face-to-face research with respondents goes on for much longer than we might anticipate today.
So I think the trickiest thing in all of this is that there's been a number of articles trying to predict what the long-term effect of this would be on the market research industry and the media industry beyond the current crisis. Mm-hmm. I guess the most obvious area for you is that Barb is continually developing new initiatives to measure different types of viewing. Presumably a number of developments have had to be put on hold, and how likely is it, do you think, that you'll be able to get back on track when you get back to normal in terms of some of the things you were planning to do? And I guess specifically, around about March, you were due to be announcing a new tender result for contracts A and D. I assume that's on hold?
Let me split my answer into two. Yeah. What we need to do in the current contract and future contracts. In terms of the current contract, we're continuing to talk to Kantar about developing new elements of the service, whether it be the next step in delivering Project Dovetail, which is the multiple screen reach and frequency of billboard campaigns alongside linear campaigns, that's that conversation hasn't been affected by this. We're also talking to Kantar about introducing more granular reporting of viewing to SVOD service content, and that's a conversation that hasn't slowed up. The one sort of current development which is likely to be affected is that we, as I think people watching this will know, we committed last year to deploying in our panel of homes a new meter that sits on the Wi-Fi router. And Kantar has started rolling this out to the panel. They got a good momentum going, and that momentum's come to a halt. We've got to about 40% of panel homes. We're starting to get data back. We're able to assess data. That's not to say we're ready to publish anything just yet. So I think it's very likely that some of the benefits that we expected to see from the router meter, which we were anticipating at the end of this calendar year, early 2021, they're going to be delayed a bit, I would imagine. So I think that's the one tangible part of our current service development, which is clearly going to be affected by our current inability to get into panel homes. So that's what's happening with regard to the current contract service development. You rightly pointed out that we've been running a tender process, and it's a tender process for contracts that are due to start in 2023, so just under 3 years away, and run until 2028. And so the current events don't change our overall objective from this tender process of having the versatility to track all the different technologies that TV channels and media services will use to distribute their content to viewers throughout the decade that is stretching ahead of us. And the context for the decision has always been set by how we best secure innovation. And the timetable was set to give us time to implement the chosen solution, regardless of who we choose to work with. And with any tender process, there needs to be a consideration of how we mitigate the risk of instability as any changes are made. And those changes could be introducing a brand new TV set meter to the current panel. It could be extending the current panel to being a larger panel. It could be building a new panel completely with a different contractor. And the current situation has complicated this risk assessment, although it hasn't changed the need for us to make a decision about which research agencies are the right long-term partners for Barb. And as you pointed out, Richard, we were due to be making a decision in mid-March, but I think it's entirely understandable in the circumstances that the industry thought it right to put its foot on the ball and consider its options in terms of the implications of the risks of different choices in front of us. But that's not to say we've kicked the ball into the long grass.
Okay, that's a useful metaphor. So similar to the Premier League, you're not planning to void and start again the whole process, but you've put your foot on the ball to see what the field looks like before you carry on. So that does make sense. I realise I asked a question Mike was supposed to ask. So I'll leave Mike to ask the final two questions if he's willing to do that. And again, slice out what I've just said.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously we were interested in your views as to whether this crisis would represent the end for face-to-face interviewing in market research.
I think, I mean, in any market upheaval, there's a tendency to believe that some of the changes will be permanent. And I mean, in different circumstances, I remember how the industry rushed to the conclusion that big data mark the end of consumer research, which patently isn't the case. So I think it's too early to say, and there are other wiser people than me who can make the case for why face-to-face research is such an important part of what we do. The point I would make on this is that humans are, in the long run, resilient, and they tend to stick to what they know works best. And I came across a study recently which was done following a major tube strike in London. And the study found that about 10 to 15% of people who'd stuck to the new travel sort of routes they adopted during the tube strike once the tube strike was over. So what that tells you is 85 to 90% went back to doing things in the way that they always knew best. So I think it's far too early to proclaim the death of face-to-face, but there is a great opportunity to test and pilot new ways of potentially doing things.
It's a really good point. I remember thinking recently, being in the canteen at work in the week after 9/11, sitting with a load of colleagues saying, well, that's it, no one's ever going to fly again, are they? Pretty soon things got back to normal, but with you know, people just more careful about, you know, how they flew and security. But
The thing is, though, that when in times of crisis, when temporary shortcuts, if you like, are introduced, some of which may well be cheaper, there is the tendency to actually go and persist with these options after things have settled down. And I wonder whether you think there's any danger of that.
I think there's always a pressure on how we make the best use of the investment that we're responsible for making on behalf of the industry and audience research. And I think necessity is the mother of invention. It's not my phrase, it's one I'm borrowing. It's a good phrase. And to the point I made a couple of minutes ago, I think this is a really good opportunity to test and pilot different ways of doing things. And in doing that, we have to recognize that we have to balance different priorities. Clearly, the quality of the sample, the quality of the panel, which face-to-face is very important in giving assurances on, is very important. But equally, reducing data variability is very important too. And to do that, then bigger samples are needed, and bigger samples cost money. And there has to be, in that conversation, an informed debate about the trade-offs. And if in what we do in this crisis in front of us right now is to, through necessity, test and pilot new ways of doing things, and some of those are seen to help that trade-off conversation, then I think that's to be welcomed. But underlying all of these conversations, we mustn't lose sight of one thing, which is that any currency lives or dies by whether it has the trust of the industry that uses it. And any long-term changes that emerge from the current crisis has to have that thought foremost in our minds.
Yeah.
Sounds like a really good point to end the conversation on. So thanks for making the time to meet up with us. I know it's strange, you tend to think everyone's at home and they've got time, but actually people seem to be spending even more time on video conferencing and catching up and generally doing work. So thanks for squeezing us into your day, and hopefully we won't have to catch up in 6 months' time to see how things are still going. We'll be back to our normal format by then, but fingers crossed.
And hopefully you'll be absolutely wrong, Richard, and they won't void the current football season.